Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to Someone Who Isn't Me, episode number 24. My name is Daniel Picarter, and my guest on Swim for this one is Manuel Gagnon from Zeal and Ardour. And over the course of the episode, we talk about the new Zeal and Ardour album, which is called Stranger Fruit, which is brilliant. It's due out June the 8th. And we talk a bit about the band's inception, but that's been discussed a lot, so we don't linger on it too much. But we mainly discuss the esoteric aspects and topics and themes that run throughout the new album. The album is a great work, so you should definitely check it out when it comes out soon. You can already listen to the singles Gravedigger's Chant, Waste and Built on Ashes, which are already out now. So let's just get into it. This is Manuel Gagnon.
I'm going to open my drink first. So essentially what the podcast is conversations with people that I want to have interesting conversations with. And I want it to be about the album specifically, but also to move, like, I want to talk about how you started doing the, like, Zeal and Ardour and stuff like that as well. So if any of that feels a bit boring and repetitive, I apologize now.
Totally fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's not the first time.
I know, exactly. That's what I mean. I realize that can be a little dull and stuff.
Listen, other people have proper jobs, so I'm...
Yeah, right?
I'm golden.
Yeah. I don't yet, so... I have notes. My notes look like, much like the letters from the lady I was telling you about earlier, but... I mean, first of all, let's talk about how you started doing this, because Zeal and Ardour, for me, it suddenly appeared, and it became... I was so into it immediately, so sold, because it ticked so many boxes for me.
Yeah.
That I was all in immediately.
Yeah, we noticed, and we got invited to do the session, so yeah, thanks for that.
But what I mean is, it's like, you know, there was a time where how it came about, and, you know, you did a self-release beforehand, and I guess not many people know about that, and I found it interesting that there was something that referenced it in this record.
Yeah.
Just in one of the phrases in one of the lyrics. But you were doing Birdmask originally, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So how did the transition come about? Because I presume you're a person that listens to like a wide variety of music, right?
Yeah. I was doing the Birdmask thing, which is, for the uninitiated, like a pop experimental shindig. But I just kind of got bored with it, because I tend to get bored quickly. And to counteract that, I would go on 4chan and ask...
Which is like hell on the internet.
Pretty much, yeah. And ask people just to name random musical genres.
Hmm.
Then I'd take two of them and make a song out of it.
So there's more than... So there more of those things existed outside of Zeal and Ardour as well?
Yeah.
But what were some of the others then?
One was like aleatoric folk music. One was... danger music with tango influences, but they all sounded pretty shit, just to be totally transparent.
Yeah.
But yeah, one day one guy said black music, well, in a different way, and black metal, and that idea kind of stuck with me. So,
but it almost feels like it was there's more to it than that for me, because I think obviously the terminology that he used is just horrendous, obviously. But I mean, that's 4chan for you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost feels like that's why the music sounds like it does. Like, it's informed almost like it's like a fuck you to that.
Yeah.
Right?
It is, yeah. But it's also, it's multiple fuck yous. It's kind of also, in a way, a fuck you to the black metal scene as it is now.
Yeah.
With the, you know, the whole very strict rules mindset. And in a way, that's very counterintuitive to me of what black metal was supposed to be. Like this really free, fringe, experimental thing.
Yeah.
But now there's all these rules to adhere to, and it's not true if it has this and that, and that's just... counterintuitive.
Does that bother you? Have you had like a, do you feel there's been a backlash about that then in that case?
I mean, I feel the backlash against my music because, you know, it takes all these, it doesn't really deal with those rules and it's not true and not cult, but I'm also at peace with it. Like yeah. In the end, I don't really want to be part of that scene if that means I need to stick to all these rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, why would you set all these parameters on creativity? But I guess great things do come out of that.
Yeah, I don't want to hate on everything that produced. It's just that this blind intolerance is kind of aggressive.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm happy that music like this exists, but I'm also very intrigued by new music to grow from it.
Yeah. Were you a fan of black metal prior to this then?
Yeah, very much so. Like I listened to black metal since I was like 14 because it was like the most aggressive, most fast music.
Yeah.
And for a teenage boy, that's like the best thing in the world, of course.
Yeah, of course. Like for me, it was like hardcore. So it was, yeah, same vibe.
Yeah.
But then when did you realize that this was like, as you said, all the others felt very throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
And just didn't work. When was the point? What was the point where you suddenly went, this is a whole new creative thing, like where it actually feels like a cohesive thing, rather, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, to clarify, the first few songs I did sounded horrendous.
Yeah.
But I always thought there is something here that is musically interesting, because both the soul stuff, or the spiritual stuff, and the metal stuff have this emotional force. It's never like, I feel meh, but I feel fucking angry. Oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
I'm fucking pissed, or I'm super elated, and it's euphoria or catharsis always, never like a compromise of feeling. And I think those things bounce off each other well.
Yeah, because they feel like they both have that, which is bizarre when you think about it. It
just totally,
feels
right?
they're like polar opposites.
Yeah.
But then that's the beautiful thing about it, because when I got the new record, like, things jump out to me, particularly because I'm a nerd and I'm really interested in a lot of esoteric stuff. Like, so straight away, as soon as I see Solvay and Coagula in anything,
mm-hmm.
that's like, oh, okay, cool. then that means that person at least has a surface understanding of what that represents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this whole project, or this whole band, or this whole creative endeavor of Zeal and Ardor is really... represented by that, you know, like Solvay and Coagula as an alchemical
mm-hmm.
theme. That's what this would feels like to me. Or am I reading too much into
it? No, actually, that's exactly the intent. It's we dissolve and kind of make something liquid and form it into like this waxy consistency, and you know, have it coagulate into something entirely new. That's the intention. So
yeah,
kudos,
take apart and put back together.
Yeah, so stoked you got that.
Yeah, but I mean, it feels like this is because it, like, there's a lot of things that like a lot of people use references and terminology within songs and stuff because they've kind of skimmed like wiki and, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, that's cool, that sounds really evil.
Yeah.
And and that's cool, fine. If you're using things for an aesthetic surface sheen, that's cool, because mm-hmm. that's still going to imbue your work with everything that those things represent, whether you're aware of that or not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how I feel, because if you apply certain maxims to your work, even if you don't understand them,
mm-hmm.
it's going to seep in.
Exactly.
Which is why, like, when I got the debut album and I was, like, picking through it like I do, unfortunately, on first listen of things, like, I enjoy things, but at the same time, I have like an almost not analytical. Well, yeah, it is actually. But I
I get that, and I have that too. Like that impatience of, well, yeah, I get it. It's emotionally resonating with me, but I think this is supposed to go in that direction, or this might be meant this way. And
yeah, or why have they said that? And
yeah.
Why is this in there? And like the Crowley sample on the first record, I can't even remember what song it's in.
I think it's in...
I'm terrible with song titles.
Me too, even with my own.
Yeah.
It's in a song, yes.
Yeah, because I recognized it straight away because his voice is so distinctive. Yeah. And there's a fragment of it in
Don't You Dare. It's
Fire Emotion.
Yes, exactly.
Is that also the one, because I like picking through things where I hear like samples of things and I realize that things just sound cool and fit well, but then I also want to know where they're from. And there was the one, the Detractors and Accusers. Making ideal human sacrifices. What's that from?
That's Anton LaVey, actually.
Is it LaVey?
Yeah.
Ah, because I knew it, and I couldn't work out where it was from. Is it from Satanic... not from the Bible, it's from the... is it from the Rituals? Is it from the Bible?
It's just from an interview he gave, and I cut it out of a YouTube clip, because I'm a professional musician.
No, but I knew I recognized it, and I was like... And I was just trying to, I was going through my mental Rolodex going, where's that from? I know that.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I was trying to look up through different books. Ah, okay, cool. Do those things resonate with you then in Crowley and LaVey?
Well.
Or is it just
actually not LaVey. Actually, I'm more team Satanic Temple than I'm Church of Satan. Because certain aspects of it are just silly. Like the No Mercy for the Weak thing, I think is utter bullshit. Whereas, you know, the fulfillment of the ego and the appreciation of your urges, that's just honesty. And I that's something I can subscribe to.
Yeah, because LaVeyan Satanism is like humanism dressed up in a spooky cape, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I sport spooky capes sometimes. So
yeah, exactly. I'm all for that. But all my notes, like I said to you, are kind of really shambolic as I've gone through different things. So if we can pick through it. And if it makes no sense sort of in any real timeline or how the track listing flows, then I apologize now.
Whatever, let's do it. Cool. I'm into this.
Yeah, because so I thought about the Alchemical Beginnings first of all. So the title obviously itself of the album, it's a clear reference
to Transformers 3.
Yeah, exactly. The best one. Yeah. To Mirrorpole. And then Billie Holiday.
Exactly.
You were saying to me earlier that you felt, I feel that the kind of resonance of the sound of the spirituals and their history of where they're from like black culture in early America and how that grew, it was always used and utilized within the music, but it was never really specifically
addressed. Yeah.
And this record, it feels like there is, like I said to you earlier, like on Servants and Row, it feels...
Exactly, and I just wanted to be more specific about that because, as I said, I didn't really provide context in the first record, which added to the mystery of it all. But I think, especially nowadays, I think I owe it because me myself being mixed and I grew up in Switzerland, I'm far removed from having experienced any sort of plight similar to that of the Black American community back in the day. So
yeah.
For me to just, take these simulacra and just use them in a funny way, that sounds bad. So I felt responsible.
I don't feel like you were, though. I felt like it was...
No. I mean, but it could be perceived that way.
Yeah.
And I just want to clarify that with this record a little bit.
Yeah, you can definitely feel that. And you were saying about how that then is sat within a modern context as well. What did you mean about that?
Stranger Fruit is, an extension of Strange Fruit, where Billie Holiday sang of, the fruit hanging in the tree, but she meant, the hanged people.
Yeah, the lynchings.
Exactly. And Stranger Fruit are the fruit actually, sitting lifeless or laying lifeless on the ground with shot wounds in their flesh.
Yeah.
That was kind of the allusion to that. And with songs like... Servants, it's not quite clear if I'm, if it's a slave riot being called to action or if it's like an appeal to the American middle class at the moment. I really revel in that ambiguity of it.
Yeah.
And it's very possible that no one will ever like read into it what I read into it, which is fine. But for my personal piece, it was important.
Yeah. And I think great art is multifaceted anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah. I mean, if things are clear cut. See, this is one of the problems why I feel about doing things like this, because it's almost like these are conversations for me to clarify what I think,
and
find out what those things are, and then find out what somebody means, which is not always the best way.
Yeah, I mean,
but I think they're good conversations to have.
Yeah, it feeds that hunger. I think as long as you have that curiosity, or it instills a curiosity, that's already a success in my book. Because the interpretation, I do not have control over what people read into it. Yeah. And I'm at utter and total peace with that. So I do revel in the possibility of actually explaining what I think it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I thought it's funny as well, because obviously listening to it and thinking about the title and everything that implies, and the lineage of those concepts, I guess, you know, about the original poem and then his wife setting it to music and singing it, and then Billie Holiday taking it and making it this enormous thing that resonates across the world. And then you have like Kanye doing Blood on the Leaves, and then you have it, and that makes perfect sense. But then, you know, like a week ago, he's saying slavery is a choice, and it's just like all these things are just.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, Kanye, I think he's just being contrarian for marketing purposes.
I think so.
I don't want to really give that any room, because people are obviously writing about it and reading into it. And I think he's just kind of, you know, counting his cash at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a dangerous game to play, I think.
Certainly, yeah.
Especially at the moment.
It's careless, I think.
Yeah. Especially when you've got someone like Donald Glover just put out the new video.
Yeah.
And then you go, there you go.
Yeah. It works,
why
right?
Why didn't you do that? Because this is so artful, and it gets the point across, and it's great, and it's a perfect commentary, and nothing is laid out too clearly.
It's such a beautiful video. I also love the song, actually.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Good boy. Good boy, Donald.
Yeah, nice.
You done good.
So, in the press release,
there's
a few things that it references very quickly as things that have informed the making of the record.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get into a bit about that sort of stuff, if we could. Like, it said, I can't even remember exactly what it said, but it said about Yoruba people, about the Goetia.
And the Grimoire of Abramelin. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the Yoruba people.
Yeah.
How's that informed it, and why do you have a...
Well, it's less the Yoruba people, but the Yoruba religion.
Yeah. Chrislam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad used to, he's the white one, by the way. He used to play, he's the white wine of the family. Shit. Anyway, this bottle of white wine used to play in salsa bands, and he would be the percussionist. And those salsa people would also, because they're from Cuba, perform these Yoruba rituals, where he would also take part in.
Okay.
And these are these really intricate, complicated, polyrhythmic things.
Yeah.
But very repetitive. And in these seances, when you're born in the Yoruba belief, you have a god ascribed to you. So you have a certain dance you do, and you get possessed by this god.
Yeah.
In these rituals. So I saw that when I was like 7, and it kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, I can imagine that would.
yeah. And that's like one of the most strange, magical, and utterly bizarre things that I've witnessed. And I've incorporated those rhythms into Stranger Fruit, and as a kind of nod to that whole world.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of syncretic Christian ideals is amazing, because it's such a... The idea of it is so bizarre, because it's almost like camouflaging a religion in Christian iconography.
Yeah.
So that they can continue practicing their own faith.
Like but Santeria and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And Palomayombe and Kimbanda and all of those different... I mean, essentially, they all feel like facets of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of, a camouflaged self-belief or their own belief.
Yeah, of like a set of gods and orishas and...
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the idea of hiding them amongst Christian saints.
Yeah.
I think it's really subversive.
But
that makes sense in a way, because if you look at things on an archetypal level anyway, you're looking at facets of the same thing, right, from a different perspective.
Exactly.
It's just a different name.
Yeah, so Christians are bound to have this similar archetypical figure just named differently. And it's easy to stick your actual homeboy behind that name then.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of echoes through the entire world in weird ways.
Yeah. So have you actually looked into any of those practices yourself? So you're saying about how you're putting those rhythms within the work.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing that?
What's up with that?
What's up with that? Is that because they're interesting rhythms and you feel a connection to it? Or because you actually want to imbue it with something less tangible?
Actually, it's both of those things. First of all, because I grew up with this, and this is something that I learned from my father, and I couldn't really get rid of it. Hmm. Also, it's an African religion, and I think to backtrack to spirituals, to go one step back would just to go be to go to that.
Yeah.
And so this is like the roots of roots music, and I think it has its place. It's earned place in my whole pantheon of weird references through that. And that's the reason I wanted to, in some way, shape, or form, incorporate it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you said about roots as well. It's interesting because you obviously referenced poplars in that when you were saying about in I think it was in the press release.
Yeah.
But obviously that references Strange Fruit itself. But there's a thing. It was actually in the track Stranger Fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that the lyric beckoning call from the crown to the root, this tree don't fall. Like, the thing about poplars is they're known because they're used as almost like this archetypal thing because they have really deep roots.
Exactly.
Which also references back to what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Oh, am I reading too much into
that? No, actually, it's exactly what I meant to say.
No, but it also, no. From the crown to the root also made me think of from Keitha to Malkuth on the Tree of Life.
Is that wasn't intentional, actually.
No?
I think it was just the hierarchy of this of society.
Okay.
Because it runs so deep. I guess there's this, America believes it's in a post-racist society right now.
Yeah.
And the belief is shared, you know, throughout the entire society.
Do you think it actually is, though?
No way. No, no.
Yeah, I don't think people actually believe that, though.
Some people do.
Yeah.
Some people do. And
I think, but just in the middle. I think it's the people that sit in the middle that believe that we are beyond this.
But then my reference doesn't work. Damn.
Oh, sorry. Carry on.
Anyway.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So, okay.
The idea is just that the structure is so high and so deeply rooted that it's just not really...
It's endemic. It'll never change.
Exactly.
Do you think that?
That's
a pretty bleak outlook.
It is a bleak outlook. I mean... The reason I call to attention these things is that I want it to change.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So,
and art is a great means of change.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I'm not kind of imbuing my worldviews on other people. It's just kind of observations I want to make.
Yeah.
The
art that anyone makes is a representation of themselves and how they feel, right?
It's supposed to be.
Yeah, let's be honest.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Exactly. But I'm not saying this is how it's always going to be, and everything is shit. It's more like a call to action. But the last thing I want to do is tell people what to think.
Yeah, of course. Because there's enough of that going on already.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah. Ship on fire.
Yeah.
Like I said, things jump out at me. For a start, anything where you say
say about Widdershins, and is it 7 letters in 7 rows?
Yeah.
So that made me, and then when it does the Milan Irago Lamal Ogari, but it doesn't have the last two on it.
Oh, fuck, you noticed?
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, that's like Magic Squares. And that's,
exactly.
That's from, as you said earlier, from Abramelin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are actually formulas to summon specific events.
And yeah.
I think that one, I know that one is to summon Hailstorm, actually.
Okay. Because in another one that I heard, it's like if you write the Milan Square on a parchment and put it under your hat, it allows spirits will grant you
insights
into past and future events.
Mm-hmm. There's different interpretations,
yeah, right,
of that book, and some people kind of mixed them up. I don't know who's right, who's wrong.
Have you ever done any of those? Do you like use any Goetic magic or anything like that? Have you ever?
I'm kind of more into chaos magic and sigil magic.
Me too.
Well, the stuff like Grant Morrison says, I'm pretty much into that. So he's talking about hyper sigils and how powerful it is to cast these in whatever shape you want to cast them. I tend to release them as albums.
Yeah, I was about to say that's exactly what this feels like.
Yeah,
like we were talking about the distillation and then bringing back together. You could look at it that the music is like a giant thematic sigil, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's just the album logo that's everything that I put out. So
yeah,
in a way, who knows? Maybe it worked.
It seems to be.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna say what I wish or what I'm trying to cast.
Yeah. Do you like Peter Carroll's stuff? Do you read his?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. Because it's
what
very
about Spare? Do you go back that far?
No.
Austin Osman Spare?
No.
Oh, okay, you need to.
Okay, I'll check it out then.
Yeah, he's the guy that invented sigil magic.
Oh shit!
So he was a British artist, and he was the youngest artist to present at the Royal Academy when he was like 14. This was like in 19. My dates are terrible, but around 19, sort of 18.
Wow. Okay.
And then he became a war artist. And they've got some stuff of his in the Imperial War Museum. Like, there's a famous one of a guy tending a guy in a gas attack. But then he worked more and more. He would make automatic drawings, and then he did this thing called the Book of Pleasure, and then through that he invented sigil magic.
Wait, the Book of Pleasure rings a bell.
Yeah. You should definitely have a look at that.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, because it was him that like Kenneth Grant was the guy that was like, this guy is the guy.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, there's this story that Crowley was like, no, this, because they apparently they were aware of each other in at some point in time, and Crowley was like, no, this guy's part of the Dark Brotherhood, he shouldn't be doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, even more. But his artwork's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, his paintings and his drawings are unreal. He used to put himself in a trance and then just draw, and then when he came out of it, that you know, the stories are that his studio would just be littered with these
holy shit
fantastical drawings of like entities.
Oh, I should very much check this guy out then.
Yeah, it's cool.
I finally like got the description of your art now. It's somewhere between Andrew Wyeth and Francis Bacon.
Because okay,
you have this impeccable, like, very filigrane stroke,
yeah,
that you do, but you also have the, like, that aggressive vehemence of Francis Bacon, and it kind of just fucking works.
Thank you.
Sorry, just click now.
Thanks. I don't feel like I should be mentioned in a sentence with either of those people, but yeah, that's great.
There you go, it happened.
Yeah, nice. What's the deal with the Goetia references and stuff?
Well, a lot of these demons tended to have, like, a bunch of slaves.
Yeah.
But, like, hordes of them. And I think that's just another layer to draw similarities to that.
Yeah.
Also, this is something I kind of grew up with. Well, I grew up without, like, any belief. My parents were like, look, there's all these religions. People are into them. Check them out if you want to. We're not... pressuring you or anything. So I read all these religious texts, and of course I got fascinated by this sort of thing. And again, it's like a thing I grew up with and was always fascinated by.
Yeah.
What, like, stuff like Duplantis, like the Dictionnaire Infernal and stuff? Because yeah, for me, exactly. That was, like, as soon as I started looking into that, and I'd see seals and then see the actual, those, I can't remember the guy's name that illustrated.
Yeah, these, like, these lithographs or yeah. These, yeah. I don't know the
so
guy.
So powerful and striking. Mm-hmm. And just felt, at the time, like, when I was, like, nerdy heavy metal kid, I was just like, this is cool.
Exactly. And for a kid, that's just, yeah. Yeah. It's basically my picture books back in the day.
Yeah. I find that stuff really fascinating. I've never really gone into that that magic, though, because I'm really cautious of it.
Yeah, but same with the Abramelin stuff. You notice that I cut off two rows of it. That's exactly that cautious thing, because...
I probably shouldn't have even mentioned it, but okay.
But if, like, someone's just kind of singing along and by accident doing something really bad, that would be on me. So... That's why I keep them censored.
That's interesting. Yeah. So We Can't Be Found, you say about there's a few names that are in there. But then there's some that I didn't recognize. That I didn't, like, there was Amalek, which is is another form of Samael, right?
Yeah.
Poison of God.
It's Amalek. It's so hard to, like, think of lyrics.
I know,
contest.
Man. I'm sorry, but but then there was some German in there as well. The Wart nicht auf
die Antwort. Yeah.
Kommt, sie kommt.
That's actually just like a phonetic decision, because that there, if you say "don't wait for the answer," it's
She's
never
coming.
It's never gonna be as hard as like "warte nicht auf die Antwort." That's just because it sounded, for lack of a better term, more metal.
Well, yeah, I mean, this bands have made careers out of it. It was, I was saying earlier about it being, about a point that was almost self-referential to the first ever release. And that was, I'm only just getting to it, which was in Don't You Dare, where it says about the Alexis Belial, Bellator Hali Ra.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, Bellator Hali Ra was a, don't mind me, I'm just pouring water over my pants, mainly.
Honest.
That was a song of the now non-existent first release.
You know you can still find some, though.
Like, no, you cannot, podcast listeners. It was impossible. Scrubbed off the face of the internet. But if you have a torrent client, you might fucking find a way.
Yeah. I don't have a full copy of it, though. I've got bits.
Ooh.
You have to...
I can send you... I mean, no. No, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else did I want to talk about? I made notes about You Ain't Coming Back. See, that's one that seems like it really references, like, Grimoire Magic.
Yeah.
About don't let anybody step in the circle now. And don't let anybody tell you you're safe. And who dares come into where I'm standing? That's, like, obviously... Is that what that was referencing?
That was exactly that. Just basically. And if that was actually, because it's basically like a warning and an instruction how to properly do a summoning. But it's the poppiest song of the record.
Yeah.
And I find that just very satisfying.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think those balances are great. No, go on.
I did something similar with the final track where it's, you know, one of the most... digestible songs of the record, but it's also lyrically, I think, one of the darkest, because it's just kind of hopeless.
Yeah Nice one to finish on. I'll leave you with that. I was reading something recently and I found it really fascinating. They were talking about it's a series of, I'll tell you about it afterwards if you want, because it's a long-winded thing, but it's a series of books and it covers everything that you'll probably be interested in, through like conspiracy theories, CIA programs, serial killers,
oh my,
magic, and then into like transdimensional stuff and UFOs. And one of the things that was in it, in one of the books, was saying about how this guy had a theory that are you into UFO stuff?
Yeah.
Like, okay. I thought you might be. So have you noticed that in a lot of UFO literature recently and stuff online, the word demonic keeps appearing now?
Yeah.
That's weird, right?
It is.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea. I mean, who's writing these things, I guess?
Exactly. You could just go, these are all cranks. And
But I find it interesting that as we were saying earlier, like the different Orishas and gods and all aspects of the same thing, and there, and now I find it fascinating that, that people are kind of putting other kinds of folklores together.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So like
kind of get hands into that monomyth thing.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
The very Gibson Campbellian.
Yeah.
But the idea that that word now is appearing a lot in ufologists talk, or some of the more fringe ones,
yeah,
of course, because the other ones are like, no, they're beings from space and they're very smart and they've made spaceships.
Exactly.
But then other people are saying, well, actually, no, these are things from another realm. And you could just say that that is like in an almost like a quantum way, like it's multi-dimensional thing. Mm-hmm. Or you could look at it in a more religious context.
Yeah.
Like in an Islamic context, that would be the jinn realm, right?
And exactly.
And the jinn themselves. And then, but yeah, I just find it fascinating that people are now saying that there's, that word in particular is getting bandied around. But he said about this theory that, sort of playing on that, that he found it interesting that spaceships that are being seen are either circular or triangular,
mm-hmm,
and how that references in like Solomonic magic and ceremonial magic, like triangles and circles for points of protection for viewing and summoning things.
Yeah, that's true.
It's pretty nuts, right?
Yeah, that is pretty nuts, and it kind of fucking makes sense too.
Yeah. Shit. How things can appear out of nowhere and then disappear, or supposedly, yeah, allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Right.
Yeah, also, like, have you heard of machine elves or something
like
that?
Yeah, of course, DMT.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I had this conversation with. So, I had a conversation with, you know, Tom DeLonge?
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a conversation with him a long time ago, and I came off sounding like a maniac, I think,
okay,
looking back on it. Because I was talking to him about how I'd been reading a lot of reading books about DMT, and how a lot of things were referencing, like Rick Strassman was saying that when he first started doing those first experiments,
mm-hmm,
and the clinical trials for the spirit, what became the Spirit Molecule book, that people were having similar encounters with similar beings that were recognizing them next time they were back.
Yeah.
This is all alleged, obviously. And how he then started to having to take into account and read lots of literature on alien abduction, because he was finding as many parallels within that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also, like, I wouldn't know this, but if, allegedly, if you take enough mushrooms, you can encounter these beings also. Again, I, some blog probably wrote about it. And, the thing is, these beings actually tend to you like you're a dog. Like, they show you, allegedly, like, portals and different things you just can't comprehend.
Yeah.
But in a way that they know you can't get it. So, yeah, check this out. You're too stupid to figure it out anyway, but look.
I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah. And that, yeah, that really kind of resembles the whole alien abduction thing,
yeah,
I believe.
But then there's also talk about people that would be experiencing DMT, where they would almost be like, they're aware that there's something behind here,
mm-hmm,
that would be the answer to everything that they're looking for. But in the meantime, there's something that looks like an archetypal, like, Egyptian god or something, going, look at this. And it's almost like a distraction to not pass through to the next point.
Yeah. It might be that.
Maybe.
Yeah. I have a friend who actually takes a lot of mushrooms on his blog post. So, anyway.
This podcast is called Swim. Someone, yeah, who isn't me anyway. So yeah, carry on.
And he says, or she says, that these machine elves are just kind of annoying. Because you kind of want to, you know, transcend or, you know, figure something out.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're just there to distract you.
Yeah, but then that trickster element has been within every kind of old religion anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
There's always that person,
mm-hmm,
and that's always been their job.
Yeah, precisely.
But then they also help the story along at many times as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, they have narrative value.
Yeah, that's for sure. Speaking of which,
mm-hmm,
the Fool and the Hermit.
as tracks. I feel like I'm jumping around a bit, but it all seems totally to kind of make sense to me at this point.
Yeah.
They're both cards within the Major Arcana that have like a narrative. I mean, the whole Major Arcana is a narrative itself, or it can be interpreted as.
Yeah.
So there's the Fool is one of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And that represents obviously like the start of a journey or somebody that's been on a journey and then come back.
Right? Exactly. And the Hermit is also a journeyman, but it's far more reflected and collected. And I think to me, Stranger Fruit also has heavy thematic relevance to departure or just, you know, leaving stuff behind. And both those cards are, well, they depict a person going somewhere.
Yeah.
And the Fool has, you know, more, also musically, it's more fun, I guess, and has more levity.
Yeah.
And the Hermit is the exact opposite. It's just this heavy, broody thing. But both have, like, to me personally at least, this air of departure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let me see where we're at. Okay. I'm just conscious of taking up all your time.
Well, I'm good.
So, okay, so since we've talked about a lot of these things and kind of referenced a bunch of things like magic and then exploration of different realms via different means.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, or the possibility to.
Yeah.
If other people have informed us of.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I often speak about with most people when we do these, musicians in particular, is about what their thought of what creativity is and where it comes from.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like most people are of the opinion that I've spoken to, I share the opinion that we are conduits to make things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're focused on things and you're in a good mindset, those things can move through you better. Do you find that? Or is that...
I can agree with that. But I tend to be very unromantic about creativity itself because you get into this superstitious thing where you're like, oh, if I didn't drink coffee, I can't be creative. So I need to have coffee, right? And then, wait, I got up with the wrong foot today, so it's not going to be a creative day.
Yeah.
But I just tend to create as much as I can.
Yeah.
And like 80% of it's going to be bad, but at least, you know, the motor's running. And
When you're mining, you'll find like gold amongst it.
And if we are conduits and we happen to be creating anyway, hey, you can be conduit right then because you're already, you know, in the process of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of belief in those sort of things? It feels like you do.
Well, yeah, but I think I also have to be very cautious of it because if I decide to think that creativity demands certain things, it can get into habits and very, very silly habits.
Yeah.
Be it wearing the same hat every day up until like abusing substances or something like that. So... luckily, I haven't found too many regularities or too many like factors in what I need to be creative.
Yeah.
So to me, it's still a mystery. And I think the reason you ask this question is because obviously there's no definitive answer.
Hmm.
And I'm at peace with that because I just try.
Yeah. Has your creative process changed, though, since the inception of this? Because, I mean... With this record, as we said earlier when we were over at my work, were talking, and you said that the approach has changed because there are the means to allow that to happen now.
Like
the first thing, which has never been released and shall never be found again on the internet, and the debut album, you made at home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, and was that working alone on those things? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But this one, you now have a touring band. Did they work with you on the record? Did you...
No, actually, the writing process was exactly the same. It was in the same basement and kitchen where I recorded Devil Is Fine. So the actual creative part was still exactly the same process. But the whole polishing and reamping and making everything real purdy part, that was done with the help of of a producer, and then with a mixer. And the only difference is I have a live drummer drumming. The rest is still done by me, pretty much. So,
but do you feel like having toured with a band, has that changed your creative process in the sense of you're either thinking, how are we going to do this live, or we now have the ability to be able to do it like this, and this would sound better now because I know what it's going to sound like when the band plays it?
Subconsciously, I'm sure that happened, but well, part of what made the first record great in my head was that I didn't really have an audience that I catered to.
Yeah.
And that was a mindset I tried to uphold as best as possible.
Which is going to be tough now because, you've had a lot of attention for this.
Exactly. And I know you can't do that, like 100%. But I mean, where it was possible, I tried to just... kind of isolate myself and just make music that I enjoyed.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think we're good, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
I need to pee, so.
All right. Perfect. Good place to stop.
Oh, shit.
Thank you to Manuel for doing this episode. I'm pretty excited because I'm actually going to go and see Zeal and Arda play tonight in London. You can follow them on Twitter and Instagram, which is just @ZeoAndArda. They've got a bunch of dates over the summer at various European festivals, including Download, Wacken, and Talbotol, and Arctangent, and Lowlands. And the album, Stranger Fruit, is due out June 8th. I'm out. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.